It's Paul Vanis with GreatDad.com, and I'm here in my weekly series talking to dads about modern fatherhood. And I've got an interesting guest on today, Chuck Chapman, who's both a therapist and a coach. So welcome, Chuck.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on the podcast. And yeah, thanks for the introduction. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, you've got a book coming out. Well, I guess we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what do you feel? How would you define your kind of mission right now in the website and what you're doing with the book?
Yeah, my mission is often to say I'm just a guy trying to help other guys be better guys, you know,
that like
we're all in this thing called life and we're all making mistakes and we're all trying to figure out, you know, purpose and meaning and, you know, and just how to show up in life. And I think the idea of being a father, you know, that's something that we may have an idea of what a father is. I mean, probably, well, I guess all of us had a father, but maybe the father was absent or, you know, you had stepdads or whatever that might be. And so that oftentimes creates sort of this roadmap for you of what you think a father should be. And yet when the kids come, there is no instruction manual. You're just winging it. So I think that's the thing that I would say, I'm a father helping fathers be better fathers.
Good. That would be a good tagline.
Yeah,
I'm interested in that idea of people questioning and how many people do question, because I think some people don't, they haven't learned to question or what the questions are to pose to themselves to come up with answers or even to know that there are big questions.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that you kind of hopefully gather some insight along the way. You know, where you start to see that, you know, there's this little person, big person, sometimes, you know, they grow up and they're still your little guys, but, you know, that you're responsible for and you have to take care of and the ins and outs of all of that. You know, when we get married, we are in a relationship, a romantic relationship, and we get married and that turns into a husband and wife relationship. And then when you have a kid, all of a sudden you have this brand new relationship, which is parent, father. And I think a lot of people, you know, the natural progression is we get married or we, you know, partner up. And then the natural progression is to have a child, right?
Right.
And we don't understand like how much of a commitment that is. Probably more of a commitment than your marriage, because your marriage, you can get divorced, right?
Right. Yeah. They'll always be your kids. You right. See that with your clients, that a lot of them kind of bumbled into it without even really thinking through how the whole thing would work or what a big responsibility and for some a big burden it would be for such a long period of time?
Well, I know I did. I mean, yeah. I remember, you know, getting married and, you know, my wife said, "Hey, let's get a dog." And I'm like, "Yeah, let's get a dog." You know, we had a dog for a while and she said, "Hey, let's have a kid." I'm like, "Yeah, let's have a kid." You know, so
my wife suggested that we borrow somebody else's.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it works that way.
Right. But yeah, I think a lot of guys, especially, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but we don't really know what that is. In fact, oddly enough, I had a colleague of mine ask me this question. In a relationship, his girlfriend wanted to get married and have kids. And he said, "Chuck, I got to ask you, when it comes to having kids, what's the upside? Yeah. I'm like, never thought about that before.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, what is the upside? I mean, they're expensive. They break your heart. You know, they don't do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And I just kind of sat with that question and I said, here's what I know about being a father. You will never know a greater pain in your life. And you will never know a greater joy. That you end up getting both of those things and you can't have one without the other. And I think that ultimately, being a dad is something we want to be good at. We want to learn how to do it. And if I didn't have a model or a role model, probably a good idea for me to get a mentor, get with other men, other dads, to be able to, you know, if nothing else, just talk about what I'm going through.
Yeah, I I wholeheartedly endorse that idea because it is, yeah. It can be a really lonely road, and it's always in conflict of what society is telling you should do.
Right.
Or what quite often was, at least it used to be, that the only voices really were women telling men mm-hmm. how they should be. And in my right. experience, men have to take it on themselves and figure out how to be a father that they can identify with. And I'm sure mm-hmm. it sounds like you do a lot of work with values and integrity and,
yeah.
and what manhood mm-hmm. is in your work.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, that's a lot of it. And, you know, the book that I wrote, it's called Finding Your Way Without Losing Yourself, The Path of Integrity. And it starts with my story, okay? My story was, again, guy, good guy, colored in the lines, had a career, job, all that kind of stuff. And yet I really wasn't happy in life. There was this sort of nagging thing of like, is this all there is? And this pain kind of led to me drinking more than I should. And I was really functional, you know, was never missed work or anything like that, but I didn't realize how much pain I was in. And a lot of that pain came from a couple of things. One was my daughter, she's now 33. She still lives with me because she has a developmental disability and she's really high functioning. She can take care of herself a lot, but she'll never really be able to live independently. So there was a grief around that. And then there was a grief about going through the divorce and when my wife left me. And when that happened, you know, I wish I could say that I was a, you know, stellar example. I was the poster child for what not to do. You know, I started drinking heavily. The first woman that came along, it showed me any intention, you know, before the ink was dry on my divorce papers, you know, we were getting married. And of course that lasted about, it was literally about 2 months before it imploded. And so I started going to AA. And while I was in AA, one of my sponsors said something to me. He said, Chuck, you know, there's pain and there's suffering. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. He said, you are suffering. And the reason you're suffering is because you are not in integrity. And I didn't know what that meant exactly, but I knew if that is the answer, that's what I wanted to figure out what it was. So I started studying integrity. I went back to school to become a therapist. I studied philosophy, read all the, you know, the books out there about how to, you know, better yourself. And what I realized was integrity wasn't one thing. It was a series of things. Integrity means an integration. For example, I have a wristwatch and that watch has a purpose and that purpose is to tell time. It's full of springs, sprockets, cogs, and all of that. You take one little sprocket and you bend it just a little bit and the watch is out of integrity. It no longer serves its purpose. So when we're out of integrity, we no longer serve our purpose. And so integrity just isn't one thing. It's a combination of all of our values and virtues. So what I did was I kind of came up for me with 16 virtues that I felt covered a lot of these things. And by integrating these virtues into my life, into a place of integrity, I found this pathway. So for example, I just rattle off a couple of them here, you know, courage, you know, courage, loyalty, wisdom, grace, kindness, generosity, self-control, temperance, justice. These are all some of the chapters that I outline in the book. Now, what I've found was with myself is that integrity is not a natural act. It's not natural for me to be kind. It's natural for me to be selfish, to be stingy, right? And these are all the things of, you know, that we would sort of call vices, or the natural thing would be a vice. So a virtue then would be, if it's not natural, but we're able to invoke it and override the natural, it makes it supernatural. And so by connecting within yourself, you know, to a power greater than yourself, and that could be whatever you choose, you know, that by connecting with that, we end up serving our purpose. And like a watch's purpose is to tell time, I believe our purpose as a human is to give love and to be love. And the way we help our children the most is by doing loving acts for them. And one of the loving acts for them is being a father, being a teacher, being a provider, being a protector, being someone who has open understanding and yet, you know, can stand up and say, that's a boundary, you can't cross that. So I think it's really difficult for men in general who've been taught this idea that, you know, masculinity is toxic, to embrace this idea that masculinity is actually an act of love. It kind of flies in the face of the popular political idea of masculinity, but I truly believe that masculinity is an act of love. Now, we're both masculine and feminine. I got both masculine and feminine energies inside of me, right? And the feminine energy is all about receiving love. So my child is actually in a feminine energy state, even if it's a boy, because I'm always giving love and they're receiving love. What I think can get messed up is when we feel like we put the child in the role of the masculine and say, you feed me, you love me, you validate me. Okay. You're not doing what I want you to do. You're not a good reflection on who I am as a father. Okay. That's me being in what I would call a lower feminine energy state, because I'm wanting somebody to do something for me, to me, as opposed to the higher masculinity state, which is, let me give to you my unconditional love.
There's a lot going on in there.
Yeah, sorry. That was like a big dump, right?
Yeah, well, between the values and love, and I'd love to get back into the love part, because I do believe that is the quintessence of what life is about, and it's not something that you really discover until later on. But how, when you look at, you've got 16 virtues, that's a lot of virtues to keep track of. I mean, right. Usually when you talk coaching, is usually maybe 3 to 5. And you know, I mean, beyond that.
Well, one of the things I do with guys is, when I'll ask guys, what does the word integrity mean to you? And they'll get a lot of kind of deer in the headlight looks. And I think it means,
lie,
you know, being
steal.
Honest. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Right. And so what I ask them to do is come up with, explain to them kind of what a virtue is. What are your top 5 things that you have that are valuable to you that you don't want to waver on? And so the list of 16 kind of gives them an ability to kind of go through. Now, they're all good, right?
Yeah.
But you're going
to
find,
and you still do a lot of them.
And you do a lot of them, absolutely, right. But what I would kind of call your core values, or the ones that you really kind of focus on. For example, for me, one of my core values is courage. And that's because in the book, I refer to courage as the North Star, because I don't think you can do any of the other virtues without courage. And courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. Courage means you're afraid and you do it anyway. You step into the fear. And by acting courageously, and oftentimes acting in love for someone, towards someone who's maybe hurt us, you know, that requires a huge act of courage. It also requires another one of my favorites, which is humility. You know, to dare but for the grace of God go I. Like, I know that I'm just as likely to mess up. You know, I just got an email from a guy who I had a group today, and he's like, oh man, I got it wrong. I got the time wrong. And he's like beating himself up. And he's like, I'm telling myself all of these stories. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm glad you can recognize that. I'm glad you can recognize that part of yourself that wants to tell your horrible whatever.
What's really interesting that you say that the core values may be things that you're not as good at. I mean, you may think of yourself as a liar all the time, but one of your core values is being honest, and you got to fight with that.
Right.
I tell a little bit of story. To have that integrity, to be true to yourself and feel good during the day, because that's usually when we're out of sync, that's when we have bad days. We beat ourselves up. Yeah.
Well, and we're never fully in integrity, I don't think. I mean, we're kind of moving in and out of it. There's pressures
of the
world.
And that's so important to give grace to when you're out of sync and you got to get back to it, right?
You got to get back to it. And so, you know, I tell a little story in the book about a client of mine who's a lawyer, and, you know, he kind of prided himself on being a really courageous lawyer. Like, courage is one of my top values, you know? And we're talking a couple of weeks later, and he was talking about this conversation that he wanted to have with his wife, and he was avoiding it. I'm like, why are you avoiding that conversation? He's like, well, I'm just afraid of a reaction. I said, I thought courage was one of your top values. And he's like, wow, yeah, you're right. You know, like, yeah, I'm avoiding things that I'm afraid of without really recognizing that when I avoid, like, if I have a difficult conversation and I avoid that, all that does is it makes the pain, the suffering greater. So by getting back into integrity, you know, okay, I practice courage. It scares me. Have the conversation anyway, and then whatever happens. So, but yeah, I think that if you have, the other thing is like, when you look through the list, what are the ones you really struggle with? You know, that's a clue as to that might actually be one of your core values.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Usually we're taught in coaching school to identify people's values by the stories they tell of when they're the most alive.
Yeah.
But I think that's really an interesting thing is that what is the one that makes you feel uncomfortable, that kind of scares you?
To be able to kind of lean into that.
Right. Well, and especially some of the definitions, like if you said courage, it's not like running into a burning building, though that may be how it shows itself, but it's trying to summon up that mm-hmm. willingness not to avoid versus being,
right.
you know, like a, I don't know, warrior
yeah.
who doesn't
yeah.
feel pain or fear or anything.
Right. Well, that's kind of the point. I have no problem running into a building and saving people, but having a conversation with my wife about sex, I'm going to avoid that. So yeah, we can think we're courageous, and on the one hand we are, and yet we're also not, which is why it's important to kind of recognize these values and recognize when I'm out of integrity, when I'm out of one of my virtues, then things tend to kind of, you know, not function as well. Now, if I'm in it, so even if, for example, there's a difficult conversation I need to have, maybe I need to let somebody go or something like that, it's going to be painful. But by practicing courage and virtues, I can do that from a place of honesty, authenticity, assertiveness, courage. And while there's pain, there's not the suffering. The suffering is if I let it go on.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't fire the person. I let them continue on and continue to make mistakes. And then I'm really suffering.
And then that value can also be a motivator to actually do it.
Yeah.
You ask yourself the question, is like, is courage really, really key value? Or am I just pretending?
Am I just saying it is?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm turning the conversation a little bit toward men of older age, because I do a group, as I've mentioned, of men after 55 training, finding meaning. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of men at that stage of your career where they are, well, they're either left their career or they're about to leave their career. The kids are moving out or moving away. They're obviously getting older physically, mm-hmm. questioning what that means. They struggle for meaning. I think a lot of men struggle for meaning at that phase. So do you have any wisdom or for men in that situation? Maybe it comes back to just trying to identify the values and continue to live them.
I think what happens for a lot of us guys is early on in our life, you know, we hear the words purpose, we hear the words, you know, what is your value? What do you bring? Right. And we typically look at that as success, as sort of monetary, you know, what is my career? What is my job? And when that becomes your entire identity, right? And then you retire, all of a sudden that identity is gone. This happens with women usually before it happens to men, because the woman's oftentimes the mother, her identity is tied up into the children. And so when there's the empty nest thing, all of a sudden she's no longer a mother, and her purpose, her primary purpose, which was raising these kids. And now as I'm retiring, my purpose, what I did, those kind of things tend to, you know, that's what my identity is wrapped in, up in, and it goes away. Who am I? What's left here? And I think that one of the values of being in integrity is that the key is to love. And the way that we love oftentimes, I think, as men, is service. And if I'm not in service, then I will generally have a feeling of worthlessness. Right. So if I'm not serving anything more than myself, you know, what am I going to do? What am I doing with this? But You know, and I think that's why, you know, the statistics are what they are. You know, guys retire and then, you know, they die a couple of years later. And that, I think it's because I don't have a purpose anymore. And if I don't have a purpose, I don't have any meaning. If I don't have any meaning, what am I doing here? I'm just taking up space.
Right.
So I think by going inward, as guys, when we're coming of age, we go outward. What's my career? What's my identity? What, you know? But by going inward, you know, who can I serve? Who can I love? Who can I make their life a little bit better? You know, that's sustainable. So I think, but for me, and I, you know, I'm getting, you know, I turned 60 this year. So I'm, you know, same thing as it's coming up, although therapists never retire. So that's the other part of that. but I think that, you know, you start looking at those kind of things and you start asking yourself, like, well, what would I do with my time? And I think that, I don't know, I'm always feel like I'm going to be serving at some level.
Yeah. Well, that's my experience in the group that I lead, is that there is this belief and understanding of the values, but there are all kinds of more existential questions about how, like why bother? Why get up in the morning? Why learn new things? Why try new things? And there, even when you talk to, you know, well-educated, rational men who know the answers to these questions, they still wrestle with them every day. Like they have to keep top of mind. And it comes back to like these values. If you keep on saying that part of your values are generosity, that means you go out and you find meaning by acting out in these values. And that's the only way forward, because the other way is not happy.
Right. Right. Yeah. No. And I'm assuming that every person has to kind of answer this question themselves. You know, as we're developing as human beings, we go through transitions. You know, you can transition from child to teen, from teen to young adult, from young adult to, you know, adult to middle age to elderly, you know. And I think that each time we go through one of these stages, we're forced to kind of take a look at ourselves in a way, you know, whether it's what is, you know, and I think this, the end, the latter stages of, you know, what did I bring? You know, what did I leave? What is my legacy? You know, that's, if we can find value in that, that this latter half of my life, I'm going to leave legacy. The thing is that we don't, I mean, people have ideas and faith about what happens when you die, but I don't really know. I have an idea of what I want it to look like. And I, you know, have faith and all that kind of stuff. But let's say there's nothing, just blank space after that. Well, you live as an echo through the people whose lives you've touched. So by doing service for someone, you're actually giving them a gift that changes their life and changes the trajectory of their life that, you know, echoes throughout these different generations. So if there's absolutely nothing else, at least I'm having an influence and an impact on the world. The conclusion I come at the very end of the book is this, is that when I was growing up, I tell the story of my dad was, we were going to borrow a pickup truck from the next door neighbor to take some stuff to the dump. And we took it to the dump. And then my dad took the truck through a car wash and he filled it up to the top with gas, even though it was almost empty when we picked it up. And I said, "Dad, why are you doing that?" And he said, "Chuck, you always want to leave things a little bit better than the way you found them." So I think that's my purpose then, is I want to leave this world a little bit better, even if, I mean, if it's just my world, if it's just my little impact, if my book, you know, one person reads it or somebody hears this podcast,
yeah.
You know, and it changes their life in some way, gives them just a little bit of encouragement. Like we left things a little bit better than we found them.
I teach another course on gratitude, that the part of that whole virtuous circle in gratitude is the ripple effect, and the fact that if I make the barista smile, she's not a little bit nicer to the next person she talks to, and there is that ripple effect, and it does add a lot of meaning in a kind of very sentimental, kind of touch your heart kind of way. How do you define How do you define love in this whole thing? Because we were talking about how love really is what it's all about. At the end of the day, that's what you're left with. And you didn't, and most people don't realize that, as we said, until you get older. And it seems to be
Sure.
there's so many parts of love that
Oh,
it's
yeah.
kind of hard to.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, there's different kinds of love. I mean, a question that, people smarter than me have been trying to answer since the beginning of time, right? What is love? And I think one of the reasons it's a little bit difficult to answer is because it's a spiritual thing. We kind of have an idea, but it's almost like mystical and, hard to put your hands around. We might define love as, something that I have a lot of affection towards, and we might define love as the reason I get up in the morning. But I think what love is love creates connection. So it's not so much about the feeling of love or what love is, but love is the connection. It's the glue. And because as people, individuals, we can't fly, we can't run very fast, we can't hold our breath underwater. The thing that we can do is we can cooperate and be in community with each other. And the way that we feel safe within a community, within a tribe, is that connection of love. So what is love? Love isn't so much a thing as it is, an action that is that the purpose it serves is to create connection, deeper connection, intimacy, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. I think it's that sense of connection that's just it's woven into everything. I guess it comes all back to the values too, is how the whole thing kind of holds together. It's a fascinating subject, and I have thought about it a lot too. It's hard to it's really hard to explain the value of it.
Hard to explain the value. And I think that, I think maybe that's part of what happens at this sort of transitional stage that you and I are in, is that, we start to realize, okay, all that time I spent at work, building a career and, making the boss rich and that kind of thing, that really didn't have any value to it. So what is it, what is it that I do? I think where you're going to have the impact is in your relationships, and where your legacy is going to be in your relationships. How did I impact my children? How do I impact my grandchildren, my friends, my parents, my coworkers? That when I come in as the source of love, which is connection, right? Same thing. To leave the place a little bit better than the way you found it. Maybe it's leave the person feeling a little bit better than the way you found them.
Just a little bit every day. Well, this has been a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, it has. I've been enjoyed it.
I do always ask three questions at the end so you
Sure.
can help maybe the younger fathers who
Yeah.
may be listening. First of all, is did you have a mantra when the kids were smaller that you used, or even now, to keep patient when they were going wild?
Yeah, this was one I had for the teenage years. And it was the mantra was just keep the lines of communication open. Just try to connect, try to keep those lines of communication open. The teenagers, they want to be on their own. They know that. And so, as a parent, I think our biggest job during that phase is to just try to stay connected with them and find out what's going on in their life. And
And
that can be one of the
it's
most
not
challenging
always
times.
easy.
It's not
I
easy.
think, unfortunately, a lot of people give up during those years and they take too many notes.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so that would be my advice for those guys who have teenagers.
The second thing, do you have any wisdom to impart? I mean, you've had four kids at different stages that would be important for younger dads to know.
I think the thing is to realize that it is a lifelong process. It's like it's a club you join, and once a Marine, always a Marine kind of thing, right? Once a father, always a father. And you can choose how you want to have. You can be a father biologically, but never connect with your child, never have any relationship with them at all. and you're still technically a father. Or you may come into a relationship where you got stepkids, such as Justin myself, where I don't have a biological connection, but I have this responsibility or love for them to want to see them grow and change and become the best versions of themselves.
Okay. And then the third one is whether you have a challenge for either men over 55 or for younger dads for the coming week.
Yeah.
Keep it top
well,
line.
Let me, okay. So a challenge, my biggest challenge for anybody, and it's kind of mentioned this in the book, is like, don't go it alone. Okay. Like, get a group, get a tribe, get some men in your life that you can speak with, that can encourage you. If you don't have one, start one. In the book, I talk about starting an integrity group. There's 16 chapters. Start a group, just invite another guy, say, hey, getting together on Saturday morning at a coffee shop. We're going to go through this book on integrity. Once for 16 weeks, you know, we're going to talk about courage. And in the back of each chapter, I've got some questions and challenges and things that you can take it a little bit more in depth. So don't go it alone. I've found
it's just great in the modern world with Zoom and everything. It's so much easier to do that. We're very much of a group. There are many more opportunities for groups than there used to be.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, when I have had the most success, it's always in the power of a group, because the power greater than myself can be the group, right? So I got sober in a group. I've lost weight in groups. You know, when I exercise, if I'm doing it in a group, I do a lot better than if I'm doing it on my own.
Yeah.
So the power of the group is really key.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, you can find Chuck's book at chuckchapman.com/book. We'll put that in the show notes. And I would imagine that at chuckchapman.com, I think there was some information on your coaching services.
Information on my coaching services. The book's going to be available on Amazon and any place that you can buy books online. So yeah,
and you
can
mix,
just search my name.
In your coaching, do you mix the therapy part and the coaching, or do you try to keep those separate?
Yeah, we were talking about that before we started here. So therapy, let's see if I can tell this to you really quick. Therapy is a medical model. All right. I have to give you a diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, and then I create a treatment plan and I submit that to an insurance company, and you know, they come back and they say they're going to pay us money to meet together. Coaching is not a medical model. Coaching is, hey, I need a little help. I need some reflection. I'm stuck here. I don't know what to do. So it's not that I'm depressed, although I might have symptoms of depression because I'm stuck, right? But I'm not clinically depressed. I'm not clinically anxious. I'm not clinically, you know, some of these things. So the therapy, you know, is really about making a change within you that's a medical diagnosis. And I think where it falls short, and which is one of the reasons why I'm transitioning out of therapy and into coaching, is it's limited and that it only addresses that medical model, whereas coaching, you can go deeper. Right. So, yeah.
It must be very interesting to have that background at the same time.
It is. I wouldn't trade it. It's great background. You know, I'm still a therapist, you know, in the state of Oregon, but outside the state of Oregon, I practice coaching, and coaching is, therapy can be about the past, trying to figure out what happened in the past. And I think coaching is more about where are you at and what's in the future.
Yeah, having done both, I mean, the therapy unfortunately kind of limits where you go next, or doesn't provide as many answers as to what should happen, unless your therapist is very directive. And of course, then there are conflicts.
Right.
Whereas in coaching, you're always looking more toward the future. Yeah. You have to summon some of the stuff in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Plus, yeah, always interesting to hear that the differences between those two, especially from somebody who knows both sides and is able to understand and play both very important roles. Because now I'm a total believer in therapy at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for therapy. I mean, I'm getting into my own therapy and working through, you know, some of the issues that came up early in my life with my own recovery and addiction. And then, you know, it became one of those things where it was like such a gift. I wanted to give it to other people. So I did a little mid life, career change, went back to school, and then just haven't looked back.
Good. That's a great story. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Chuck Chapman, for joining us and for your advice for dads and also men in transition. Really very much appreciate it. You can find my coaching at greatdad.com/coaching and a bunch of these questions that I offer as well. Until next time, stay close to those kids. Keep the channels of communication open. That's important advice throughout their entire childhood. Mm-hmm. The closer you can be with them, the happier everybody will be. Okay. Take care.